Well, our next guest, Dino, has got an opinion, and the ratings suggest that people are listening, and it's Ray Hadley. He's been good enough to join us on a Sunday morning as our legend of sport. Ray, good morning.
Morning, Dino. Good morning, Raymond.
Thanks for joining us, Ray. Firstly, I've got to ask you, we've got a change of government overnight. We've got a new, our 31st Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese. He comes from humble beginnings, much like yourself, Ray, and I know it's been a long 6 weeks covering this election campaign. What are your thoughts, Ray, waking up Sunday morning to a new government?
Well, I mean, obviously, I was hoping we wouldn't have a new government, but we do have, and then you deal with the cards that you've got dealt. The Prime Ministership deserves a certain amount of respect, and that doesn't matter who the Prime Minister is, but he's there, he's got the job, so what Australians have got to do today is collectively fall in behind him. Falling behind the ministers at Hill Point and hope they do a better job than the last time. They had a crack under Kevin Rudd.
Exactly. Now we've got to move on now. And we'll move on because this is a sports show and we've got you on primarily to talk about your career in sports broadcasting, which has been an extended career. You've been in people's living rooms and car radios and all sorts of things for many years. How did you get your start in sports broadcasting? And was it always your goal to follow this sort of career, Ray?
I wanted to be a race caller from when I was a small boy. I used to get the results from Rosehill and Randwick mainly, sometimes while I'd come to Canberra on Saturday meetings and write them up and do them. And then, you know, probably as a young boy, I started doing fandom calls. There's a big difference. A lot of blokes can do fandom calls, and then you've got to try and translate into actually doing it. So when I left school in about 1978, I looked everywhere for a job for a race caller, but funnily enough, in the Sydney Morning Herald jobs ads, there weren't too many race callers required. So I ended up seeing an ad for an auctioneer, training auctioneer with a passport company called Pitsun and Badgery, and I went and worked for them at the age of 17. And I stayed there for about 7 or 8 years. I became a fully fledged auctioneer at 21, and I still do it to this very day, but I had this pining to be a race caller. I got a bit of a break in 1980. They had a thing at the Sydney Cricket Ground called the CIG World's Richest Sprint over 300 metres professional runners. And the bloke that normally did it, Keith Isles, was crook. So they asked me to call the races at the SCG, and I did. They'll run at halftime of the semis and grand final.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that was when I first determined I could actually, you know, remember names and put names to runners and things like that. So Mr. Riles was still crook, and so I went on the road then with this professional troop of runners, and I did the Cootamundra gift, the Canamble gift, the Coffs Harbour gift, the Dubbo gift, every gift that was named a man I did. Didn't get paid, but they gave me a room in a motel to share with one of the officials, and it was then I had that desire. I thought, well, I can actually do this. I can turn this into a job. So most of the auctions I did then happened on weekends, and so I continued to ply my trade with a company called Steer & Company, an auctioneering firm based in Western Sydney. And eventually I made the decision that I wanted to be a race caller, so I left there. I drove in my car from Sydney to the Gold Coast and came back inland. I went to every radio station with a tape and with a CV. I didn't get one interview. I got an interview at 2HD in Newcastle. I think that's the only place I got an interview, and I came back and
Competitive field, Ray.
Yeah. I'm going to have a crack at this for a couple of years and see what happens. But I couldn't feed myself, so a mate of mine said, get a job as a cab driver and you can work through the night and then call the races on weekends if you get a crack. So I started doing that. And shortly after I started doing that, I got the job at Appen, calling the Greyhounds at Appen. I'd done all the trials at Weddy Park and Harold Park before that, but Appen was the first official job I got. I got $32.50 for 15 races. First race at 12:45, last race at 4:45, and I knocked most of it off on the punt.
Funny about that. Hey, Ray, I reckon I'll bring back some pretty good memories for you here.
Into the straight they come, and Alcer Vancelot in front. Iracles tried to get to him. He kicked away Alcer Vancelot. The Kiwi tried to get to him down the outside, late Commander Monty, but Alcer Vancelot's in front, getting to him. Quantum Lobel. Brian Hancock's going to Cornell of the Miracle Mile. Alcer Vancelot first, Quantum Lobel second. The Kiwi, Iracles, has finished third.
Dino, that was Harold Park, the great old days.
Miracle Mile, Ray. What year would that have been, Raymond? Early 1980s?
Well, I replaced Ray Conroy when he retired in about 84, so it'd be, and I called there until 92, so it'd have been in the early 80s that BJ Hancock won. And I had a great friendship there. What happened, I did Appin Dogs. I did Wendy Park Dogs, Harold Park Dogs. And then when Ray retired, I got the job at Harold Park. And Peter Valandis was my boss. He was the boss. And John Dummersley was his 2IC, who now runs Harness Racing in New South Wales. So every Tuesday and Friday, I'd go to the Harold Park trots. In concert with that, at the same time, I was an understudy for Des Hoisted, the great race caller, and then John Tapp when he replaced Des. And I, the first day I called the race was would have been 1984, January 84. I arrived at Canterbury for Saturday meeting with Tappy, and it was a two-year-old race, the first race. And Tappy said, "How you been going with the practice at the trials?" And I said, "I've been going all right, yeah, fair, yeah." He said, "Good, put your 10.50s on the stand, you can do the first race." And I was as nervous as a kitten. And the first race was a two-year-old race, won by a horse called Street Cafe.
Yeah,
I reckon it was the 7th of January, 1984, Street Cafe, ridden by an apprentice called Darren Beedman. It beat a horse called Aracus and a horse called Winabi. And Street Cafe, shortly after that win, won, of course, the Blue Diamond.
Yeah, Theo Green, good two-year-old. Yeah,
Theo Green trained it. And I remember Bobby Thompson, who remains a mate to this day, had two runners in it, both named Homanton. Homanton Boy and Homanton Star. And obviously raised an interest of, I think, Asian owners. And same colours, different cap. And I was just determined all the way through the race to make sure I got one of those two right. Because they were similar colours. Only a small field, I think it was eight. And I think Cappy said to me at the end of it, "Well, my boy," he said, "what do you think?" I said, "Well, John, if I walk off course and get hit by a bus, I'll die happy."
You did it, yeah. Exactly.
Well, Ray, after that, obviously your career was starting to expand, and it was a burgeoning career in broadcasting. And it would have been about 1987, I think, where the Continuous Calls team started, and you were obviously heading up that Continuous Call team, which is still going today, which is an amazing...
an institution.
Yeah, an amazing effort for longevity. How did you get into rugby league and why?
Well, it was an accident. I was calling the races, and I wanted to keep calling the races, although I made a monumental blunder at Rosehill the day Jimmy Cassidy rode six winners. One of the winners was a horse called Bigamy, trained by BJ Smith by Double Century for Matrimonial. And it had a change of colours, and I hadn't learnt the colours that it was racing. It wasn't racing in Brian's, trainer's colours. It was in the owner's colours. And it led just about all the way for Cassidy, and it was his fifth winner. And I didn't identify it until it was about 200 metres out from the line. I had no idea. And I kept thinking about what Des and John had told me. If you forget one, just forget it. Keep calling, keep calling. It'll come to you. And it never came to me until I found the shadows of the post. But anyway, people will forget that Cole Pearce was a caller at 2UE in 1985, along with Frank Hyde. Frank had come from 2SM, and he was like Cole's co-commentator. He'd stopped ball by ball description, having done his 33rd grand final. So in 85 was Cole and Frank, and then the management at 2UE decided that they wanted to go another direction, and the TV rights had been lost by Channel 7, so Rex Mossop was at loose end, so they decided to turn Rex from a TV caller to a radio caller, which are entirely different things. And Rex never quite made it as a radio caller, as good a caller as he was on TV, and he'd sit there smoking the pipe and say, "Kenny, Ella, Berlin." And then I'd say, Rexy boy, you've got to call it all the time.
Not quite the same.
And Rex never quite got it. So at the end of 86, Rex was picked up to go to Channel 10 because they punted rabbits because he wouldn't go to Los Angeles in 84, so they punished him for that. So Rex went to TV, so they needed to call her on 2UE. So they offered a job to Hollywood and Zorba at 2GB. They said no. They offered it to Jeff Prenter, who was at 2KY. He said no. They offered it to John McCoy, who was at Brisbane. He wanted to do it, but he didn't want to come and live in Sydney, so they said no. So they had all these people offered the job, and eventually... Mark Collier, the station manager at Brenner, said, "What about Hadley?" I'd called a few games of rugby league the year before in 85 when Cole was travelling for a New Zealand test series, I think, from memory, and I'd called some three or four games. And they said, "Oh, he sounds like a race caller." I said, "Well, that's funny thing, that's what I am." So at the end of 86, early 87, they came to me and said, "You want to call the football?" And I said, "Oh, I want to be a race caller." So I went to Tappy, who was my mentor. I said, "What do you think?" And he said, "Oh, son," he said, "how much they offering?" And I said, "Oh, $60,000. He said, "That's more than I get."
Take
he
it.
Said, he said, "Look, I'll never forget." He said, "Listen, it's a lot easier calling 26 players for 80 minutes and a field of 24 for a minute and a half, you know." And he was right. And so I went and I said to Breno, I said, "Look, I've had a think about it." I said, "You know, is there any more money in the till?" And he said, "Look, mate," he said, "I heard that Jim Cassidy call the other day." He said, I wouldn't be too hesitant to take this new job." So I took it on. Ray Price was my co-commentator. As good a footballer as he was not a co-commentator. And so we went really badly. I never really ended 1 year. I mean, after 1 year, we're getting lapped by Hollywood and Zorba, who were the preemptive, you know, and really good and a good show. And before that, rugby league had started at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they went and started at one, and we started at midday to try and get an hour march on them. But they were very, very good, Greg and Peter. So they offered Greg and Peter my job at the end of '87. God bless Peter. He knocked it back, and as Zorba's a guest in the show, of course, he toughened me up, Zorba. Mm. I remember once when there was this battle between us, he said, "Ray Hadley's the only football commentator who could walk into a bank without a mask on and know where we used to rob it." You know? So we lasted, and I shouldn't have lasted, but we lasted, and then John Gibbs joined me, and then by about 91, we won the ratings for the first time, and we haven't been beaten at all. The team hasn't been beaten since. I no longer really do much I call origins and grand finals, but the team hasn't been beaten. It's an incredible run from 91 to 2022 and still winning the ratings, but that's what happened.
Ray, the continuous call is an institution, and I think we all listen to, which I think was some of the most fantastic radio with yourself and Bobby Fulton and Dean and I, both great mate Peter Chippy Flingos. So those days, continuous call, it sounded like it was almost fun. Well, it was fun to go to work, Ray.
Well, it was. We had 6 hours on Saturday and Sunday and Friday night as well. And obviously, I was really close to both Bob, who, by the way, it's his anniversary of his passing tomorrow, 12 months, if you believe it. And Chippy was, Chippy was just an incredible character. And we lost him way too early in 2004. But the turning point, gents, was for us losing the rights. After 1999, we had the Super League War, and everyone got back together and everyone was happy. But I got punished for my ARL loyalty. And when News were in control of the what was the new joint board, I'm sure people like Reeves and others decided that I needed to be taught a lesson. So they took the rights off us and gave it exclusively to 2GB and John Singleton from 2000 on. So the management of 2US said, "What do you want to do?" And coupled affected the 2GB. And, of course, the most loyal were Bob and Peter. They stayed with me along with Walker. And I said, "We'll do a show." And they said, "Well, how are you going to do this?" I said, "I don't know. We'll make it up as we go along." So that's how the continuous call team in today's form started. And that was in the year 2000, 22 years ago. So what would happen, we'd get there and, we weren't allowed to give scores. Singo drove me mad, threatening Supreme Court action. I mean, we said we'd get in a hot air balloon over Parramatta and call the football. And we had people inside the ground phoning us at scores and things like that anyway. They eventually threatened court action and TUE management said, "Look, this has got to stop." So we just decided then and there to do it in a certain way and make, instead of talking about torn hamstrings and, injuries and controversies, we just made it fun and laughed and bluffed our way through. And remarkably, when the first survey came out in 2000, Singo had paid $1 billion for the rights and bought all these people to call out the game on the planet. We won the ratings. So everyone thought, "Oh, that's an anomaly. It won't happen again." Well, we won every rating that year. We won the 5 football ratings in 2000. We won them again in 2001. So we were not calling the football, but we won the football ratings, which was one of the strangest times, I think, in rugby league sporting history that we won the ratings without calling the football. But it led to other things, obviously.
Ray, obviously, you do your 9 to 12 show every week, but you do keep in touch with your rugby league. And I think this year you will return to call the grand final. If I'm wrong, pick me up. But it would be your 33rd, and as I understand, that would actually equal the great Frank Hyde, which is an extraordinary achievement.
Yeah, I mean, I should be more than that. I had a couple of years off, as I mentioned, and then I had a couple of more years off. But Frank called 33, which included two replays, Cronulla, Manly, and then St George and Parramatta in 77. So he called the two. So that gave him 33. It would have been obviously 31, but then he did two replays. And you're right, this will be my 33rd grand final this year when we do that the long weekend in October. And Frank was a dear friend, a great mentor. He phoned me when I first started calling and saying, you've got to start saying like a race caller, son. You've got to, you know, you've got to try to get into a different sort of rhythm, you know, and things like that. And that took me a couple of years to conquer. But it's something that I'll reflect on deeply, that I've equaled by the man I think is the greatest rugby league radio caller of all time, and Frank Hyde. I'll equal his record of 33. And, of course, Ray Warren has called, I think, 99 State of Origins, and I'm about 90 or 91, I haven't checked recently, but I hope Rads does 100 this year, and does 101 or 102, and I'll do three more this year to get closer to him. And I'm contracted this call again next year and the year after. That's when my contract finishes, 2024. So I will have done, if things work out, I will have done by then 35 grand finals and probably close to 100 State of Origins at the end of that.
Well, it's fair to say, Ray, you've mastered the art.
Still 60 metres to negotiate. Plays the ball back to Meninga. New South Wales offside. Langer to Kevin Walters. Then the ball goes to Khan. Khan looking to get the pass away. Reynolds plucks it out of the sky. He goes down the touchline. Away from Barnhill. The ball to Hancock. Hancock only 40 out. The pass to Darren Smith. Smith inside the corner. The ball to Langer. Langer's only 80 out. The pass to Meninga. Meninga for the line. Back to Croy. Croy's in. Try. 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 Queensland has won. They scored a try.
One of the great calls, Dino.
1992, Ray, SFS.
Yeah.
I think the Telegraph called it the try from hell.
Yeah.
the 1992 State of Origin, Mark Coyne in the northeastern corner. Mm. And I can sit here at the moment in my office and almost relive it. And I remember I had a phone call the next day from a newspaper editor. From the Sydney Morning Herald, actually, John Lyons, and I didn't know him all that well, but he said, I'll just ring you to tell you, and he said, was that try as good as you called? And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I was in a corporate box, and he said, I had to get back to the paper, so I left early. I was in my car driving back to Fairfax, and he said, please tell me it wasn't as good as you made it sound. Please tell me. I said, no, it was even better. Sorry, John. So... it was funny, and
it was a great moment.
John, hey, left the ground to go back to work.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Ray, you've worked with some tremendous people on your continuous call team over the years, but we ask the hard-hitting questions on this show. I want to know who your best sideline eye was, Phil Buzz Rothfield or Dean Bulldog Ritchie?
Oh, that was Tony McGoat.
I want to know Buzz or Bulldog.
Okay. What's the answer, Ray?
Tony McGoat was the best. McGoo.
He's very funny.
Yes, and go on.
Yeah, Tony's favourite line on a Saturday afternoon was going to Wenny Park was, hey, boss, can you spot me 100 until my hunchback brother straightens himself out?
Otherwise, you're never going to get it back, yeah.
Who was second?
Dino wants to know.
I don't want to upset Buzz because I know he's about to come on. But he was, one of the things that our trademark was when we were really flying was around the grounds. I mean, Fox hadn't been invented. You know, you didn't get every game on TV. It was only on radio. So Brenner used to say to me, two things you've got to do, son. You've got to give the score at least 80 times in 80 minutes, so that's once every 60 seconds. And you've got to go around the grounds almost as many times. And so Buzz was part of that, along with the best of the best, Donnie Moseley, and Ian Heads was part of it. And Buzz was at Belmore, I think, one day when we crossed to him, and we used to encourage the round the grounds team to call the concluding stages. And Buzz distinguished himself with a magnificent call of a kick by the Canterbury goal kicker, I think, to win the game. And so I'd have to give it to Buzz. And the other bloke that we used to have as part of the team, of course, was Steve Gillis Chimes. And I used to love Chimes. We used to send him to Wollongong Chimes before he became a multi-millionaire player manager. And he'd have to catch the train. He didn't have a car. So at 5 o'clock, they say, Chimes said, can he go early in the wrap-up from the dressing room? So I'd say, yeah, not a problem. He wants to catch half past five train for Wollongong, back to Central. So I'd say, after the break, we'll go to Steve Gillis down there at Wollongong. And then he'd say, oh, that's good. So then I'd go to someone else. Like, there was another break, and then about 20 to 6, and we'd finally get to it. He'd be blowing up down the line to the tail off. Why do I want to catch the train? You're going to get an half past 6 train, not half past 5.
I can imagine your
poor chums. Yeah. Now, before you go, Raymond, I've got to ask you, can you clear up the debate over you and Buzz? I think it was at the Park Royal one night. Buzz tells one story, you tell another, you give your version now, and we'll get Buzz to reply.
It's an entirely different version, but this is what happened. I was calling Origin.
What year?
Dr. Nathan Gibbs was the team doctor. I got Crook on the plane. I mean, Crook, you know, like a flu or a bug or something. So I went to him and said, can you get me something to get me to the ground? And he said, so he gave me a needle in the backside. He said, this will stop you throwing up. It'll settle your stomach down. He said, but, you know, he said it'll last for about 4 or 5 hours. That'll get you through the call, which it did. He said, then go back to bed. So I came back to the Park Royal in Brisbane. And in those days, we used to go to a nightclub called Rosie's after the game with the players and the media, you know, and there were no mobile phones and things like that. Some atrocities, as Peter would say, would be committed by the players and the media. Anyway, not bad things, but just, you know, funny things. So I get this phone call in my room at, you know, 11, 11.30. It's Buzz, you know. Get out the Rosies. I said, listen, leave me alone. I'll cook, you know, go away. So this happened about 3 times. I said, I'm cook, Buzz, leave me alone. So then he came banging on the door of my room, you know. So I got to the door of my singlet and underpants, my preferred method of, you know, going to bed in those days. And I said, go away, you pest. I said, I'm cook. I thought, you know, I'm cook, leave me alone. So he shaped up as he normally does, you know, in those circumstances. He alleges I threw one and hit him, which I wouldn't do. I slammed the door in his face. As you know, he's got a rather prominent proboscis. It hit the nose, the claret flowed, and that was the last I saw him until the phone rang again. And this is the quote, and he can't deny this. He said, you and me in the car. I said, listen, you're a pest. Go away and leave me alone. That happened in the 1980s. We have remained firm friends. Every now and then he gives me a pull through with his much read column, What's the Buzz? And every now and then I give him a pull through on my much more listened to radio program.
He might get a right reply soon, Ray. But hey, Ray, before.
I'll have a different version, but you know, somewhere between mine and his lies the truth, Ray.
Fair enough. Before we let you go, there's so many great sayings that you've done in calls. I want to ask you where this one came from.
On the outside of John Simon, Stagg kicks into the end goal, took it twice on the toe, has been knocked on, 6 to go, picked up by Cartwright. If they don't score, I'll be Yobba Fanning of Scandinavian Astronaut.
Look at the eastern side of the field, they've got to spin it.
Elias, back to Salvatore, he's over, gives him that to try, and the Blues lead by 12-6. Thank God for that, I didn't fancy being a Scandinavian Astronaut.
That's very good.
Well, that was a pinch from Chippy, because Chippy's favourite one was, if that doesn't happen, I'll be a Dutch astronaut.
That's it, yeah.
No, I couldn't say Dutch, I just say Scandinavian. But look, there's a few there that Roman now pinches, that don't touch the desk, don't touch the dolls, don't go anywhere. I used to say, Blocky, pinch me, I'm dreaming. Mm. And many more, like XPT through Fassifern. And the only reason that was that there's two Fassiferns. There's one in Queensland, where I called, and one in New South Wales. So it was apropos to find a railway station to express speed that was in both markets. So, yeah, like an XPT through Fassifern. And then people used to write to me and say, the XPT doesn't go through Fassifern in Queensland. It doesn't matter.
I couldn't get the kick. Hey, Ray, look, we could talk for hours. We really appreciate you. You'll have a lot to talk about tomorrow morning on your Top Rating 2GB show from 9 a.m. to 12. So much happened in the federal election, but so much happening in the world of sport that you're also across. And as I said, I really appreciate you coming on and giving us your time on a Sunday morning.
No, Ray, you've always been a gentleman. You've been a wonderful person, and Bulldog's always been Bulldog.
Thank you, I think.
It's good. It is good fun working with him, I've got to say. Yeah, good on you, Ray.
Thanks, Raymond.
Thanks so much, Ray.
Thank you.
Yeah, boys. All the best.